Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, a podcast where authors and friends share all aspects of the Catholic faith. Learn more on reconciledtoyou.com.
Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras, the podcast about living your faith in everyday, ordinary life, especially how we can experience it through the lives of saints and those that we encounter in Catholic books. Today, we are going to be joined by Kristen Van Uden. She is the editor at Catholic Exchange and author spokesperson for Sophia Institute Press. And we're going to be talking about one of my favorite saints. I know if you listen to the podcast, you know my great affinity for St. Gemma Galgani. We're going to be looking at the new book, The Diary of St. Gemma, out now from Sophia Institute Press. Kristen, welcome to A Seeking Heart.
Good morning, Allison. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your role and how you became, you're the editor of Catholic Exchange. I'd like you to tell a little bit about that. And then how did you become the spokesperson for Sophia Institute Press? Because obviously St. Gemma can't be here.
That's right. So the spokesperson opportunity came first for me. So when I started at Sophia, we publish about 7 to 8 new books per month. And it's a good mixture between current living authors and then also reprints from the church's treasury. So I always like to joke that I am our spokesperson for all of our dead and or Italian authors, sometimes both at the same time. And
I love that.
Gemma is living forever because she's in heaven. So she's in a category of her own. It's really kind of a dream job because I've always obviously been a reader and of course been interested in reading about the faith. And so it's very much a privilege to be able to read these fascinating books from the church's history and to hopefully give voice to them as the second best thing than having the author hear themselves. One of the books that I've been a spokesperson for has been about purgatory. And an interesting thing that the priest said in that book is that the writing of good Catholic books is something that can have an effect on the soul and gain merit for the soul even after their death. So when people like us are reading these good books by Catholics who have passed away, if we gain merit from them, if we learn more about the faith and grow in our faith because of these books, these merits could be applied to those souls. So I always like to either pray for the person who I'm representing or, in this case, pray to the saint whose book I'm representing and get to, you know, spread the message to anyone who's interested to listen. And sometimes that includes secular podcasts too. So those are always fun and interesting because sometimes it's their first encounter with something Catholic.
I love that. And as a Catholic author myself, my new book, Encountering Signs of Faith, actually launches tomorrow. We're recording today on October 27th. And tomorrow my baby is birthed into the publishing world or into the world.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. Now it's even more exciting that I hope somebody gains some grace from reading Encountering Signs of Faith, which I actually do include St. Gemma in that book. She's one of the saints I highlight, and I will tell later why that had to do with my daughter, Faith. So just tell us really quickly, too, about Catholic Exchange. It's one of my favorite websites, so I really want to give that a plug.
Sure. Well, I'm always glad to hear that people have heard of us before, first of all, and also like us. So Catholic Exchange is a daily online-only Catholic resource that has been around for a couple of decades now. And so I just took over as editor this year. And we focus on prayer and spirituality, also church history and the cultural aspect of the church. So it doesn't focus so much on the day-to-day news grind or on the crisis in the church or on politics, any of that. But we try to provide content that can help the average reader, regardless of where they are in their spiritual life, to grow in that life. I like to write book reviews for Catholic Exchange. So I'm working on one now about the conditions of prayer, where I'm reviewing a book from the early 20th century by Father Michael Mueller. And we have a range of authors who really, we have somebody writing about the church in China right now, ranging to exorcists and anything in between, family life. So there's really something for everybody at Catholic Exchange, and it's been a really interesting way to connect because, as you probably know, the Catholic publishing world and the Catholic media world especially is a very small world where you'll see a lot of the same names over and over again, and it's just a really wonderful community to be able to be a part of.
Well, as a content creator, I'm always researching and looking for good content, and I'm very picky about what which content I will use and where I will pull sources from. And Catholic Exchange is one of my trusted resources, and I really recommend those listening to, if you're looking for good quality content, especially if, I love that about the history and of the church. I'm not much of a news reader, which is probably why I love Catholic Exchange so much. Right. Just to know that it's a trusted source, and I think that can be very difficult. I was just trying to write an article about the 15 promises of the Rosary, and it was just very fascinating to see the information that is out there. It's a private revelation, so of course that can become a little mucky in the waters there. That happens often, that when people have these private revelations or these private experiences, like we're going to read about St. Gemma, that we have to understand that it's not church dogma, but it is not something that we don't read, that we can use for our own spirituality, but we have to be very careful about how we speak about it and how we express it, especially as a media outlet. All that to say that Catholic Exchange does a really well job of sharing the private revelation, of sharing the church's teaching and devotions in a way that is very trustworthy. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, and that's a great point about private revelation. And the general rule of thumb is that private revelation will never contradict big R revelation, right? So that's one of the reasons that you can, kind of the litmus test when you're discerning whether a current apparition or vision is of God or of the devil, because we know that the devil can appear as an angel of light to lead those astray. Even if it seems like a perfectly orthodox message, with one little drop of poison, that's enough to kind of cut people off and fall into error. So actually, quite an interesting Sophia book called Visions and Revelations was also released this year on that topic by Father Gabriel of St. Mary Magdalene, who's another deceased author. And he writes that visions, such as the ones that St. Gemma was gifted with her entire life, are secondary and accidental to the spiritual life. So we don't base our faith on these miracles. If God chooses to appear or provide revelation to certain souls in this extraordinary manner, it's only ever to bring them closer to himself. So the reason that St. Gemma's are known to be true and approved by the church, and also the matter of her sanctity, was not so much in the fact that she had extraordinary visions, but that she united her will so closely to that of God, and she surrendered to God. So even if she had not been given these visions and revelations, she still could have become a saint because of that disposition. And her visions only served to further orient her towards God.
Oh my gosh, I love that explanation. I'm so glad that we went down that route, because that's something that I love, private revelation, and I have some of my own. And you have to be very careful, like how you share things. And again, I loved how you put that truth, even with a little tiny drop of poison. I that's going to stick with me, Kristen, for a very long time. We're talking today with Kristen Van Uden. She is the spokesperson for Sophia Institute Press. And we're speaking today about the new book of the old writings of the Diary of St. Gemma. And tell us a little bit about this book in particular.
Sure. So as you probably know, expert on St. Gemma, just a little background on her life. She was a quite contemporary saint. So she lived from 1878 to 1903 and died at the young age of 25. I always find it interesting to study saints of whom we have photographs. So it's just very fascinating to see what they actually looked like and how they actually were depicted. And so St. Gemma had a life that was characterized by quite a lot of suffering. She, as we see towards the end of her life, was able to perfect this vocation that she had towards the Passionist ministry and charism. With the final 3 years of her life, she was gifted with the stigmata itself. But before that, even from her earliest childhood, she suffered from spinal meningitis. So she's known as the patroness of those suffering from back pain. She describes in her letters this contraption she had to wear that was like this metal thing that attached to the spine at 34 places. And it just sounds like a torture device. So she was very familiar with suffering from a young age. In addition to physical suffering, emotional and also spiritual suffering. So her parents died when she was pretty young, and she went to live with some extended family. And Gemma began to have extraordinary visions pretty early, and also as far back as she could remember, she felt that she had a strong vocation to be a Passionist nun. So the Passionists are an order devoted, obviously, to the Passion of our Lord, and they were local in Gemma's village in Lucca, Italy. And she had made many retreats with the sisters there. She had gone to school, to catechism classes there. And her applications were continually denied because of her poor health. So this was really a great cross for Gemma, because she knew that Jesus was giving her this vocation, but it seemed impossible to live it out in the conventional way. But we see, because of her mystical relationship with Jesus, and especially because of her gift of the stigmata, she obviously and very clearly lived out a Passionist vocation in the world. And I've written for Catholic Exchange about this temptation to worldliness that Gemma had to struggle against her whole life, because in the convent, it would have been much easier for her to live out this vocation. She would have had more time to pray, very close to daily Mass. Wouldn't have had all the distractions of the world around her, which we could get into later exactly how her guardian angel helped her to overcome those. But it was really a greater challenge for her to live this out in the world rather than in the cloister. But we see that that is the cross that Jesus chose to give her. And she accepted that, even though it made her sad. She had visions of Jesus himself, of Our Lady, of her guardian angel, of somebody she calls Brother Gabriel, who is Saint Gabriel of Our Lady of Sorrows. So he was also a Passionist monk from her area, and he died at the age of 23. So he and Gemma never met in person during his lifetime, but he came to visit her obviously just another confirmation of her close connection with the Passionists help her overcome temptation. And then on the other side, as we see with a lot of mystic saints, so like Saint Teresa of Avila and like Padre Pio, for example, Gemma was also attacked by demons. So she would physically see demons who would physically assault her, pull her hair, poke her, things like that.
That's crazy. Can you imagine? Yeah. Oh my goodness. Sometimes I'm glad I'm not that holy.
Right, exactly. That's always a sign of someone's extreme level of holiness. The interesting thing is that Gemma would always say that the worst thing that the demons could do to her was to tempt her to sin, because sin is the only thing that can separate us from God. And so they could hit her as many times as they wanted, but unless they tempted her to sin, she would not be cut off from God. So she really feared sin as the greatest thing to fear in this life, and rightly so. Wow. And so that's one of the themes that really arises from this book, is her very acute awareness of sin. Because of her mystical relationship with Jesus, she could see how it wounded him in these deep ways, even her venial sins. And so she just had this great sorrow for her sin, which at some times even veered into scrupulosity for her. But she... It's really convicting to read this and to understand that she achieved this perfect contrition in her life, which is defined not just as a fear of hell or an intellectual understanding of sin, but a sorrow for sin because it wounds the body of Christ. And so this this is why she is considered another of her patronages is against temptation. So that combination of having to live in the world and being so heavily tempted by these demons because of her high levels of sanctity, even though a lot of us, most of us, will not be granted the same level of sanctity as Gemma, it makes her very relatable and someone we can turn to regardless of how small or how large our temptations are.
Well, this is such a God-sentence moment, because just this morning in my prayer, I was thinking about sin and, you know, the Lord finding just one righteous person and he would, you know, spare the world. Like in the Old Testament, we see that. And of course, now we know there's a lot of unrest in the world and that, you know, I have lots of anxiety. So that kind of starts to spur my anxiety. So this morning I was praying, I'm like, Lord, if you could just find one righteous person, would you spare us and make all of this yucky stuff go away? Yeah. And it was this whole idea of just the idea of even my venial sins and just what you just said. I said, well, I think I need to spend... So this saint's been very special to my daughter, but today, as you were speaking, I realized the Lord is saying she's going to be very special to me as well. So speaking of my daughter, I want to talk about the guardian angel in a minute, but I need to share the story of why Gemma is so important to our family. So my daughter, Faith, is adopted from China. She is profoundly deaf. And a few years ago, after maybe like 12 years old, so like 4 or 5 years ago, we discovered she had scoliosis. Mm-hmm. And without any medical history, it was so severe that she was going to need surgery. it was very overwhelming to us without any medical history. That's scary, right? To put your daughter under hypnosis. That's not the word I want. Mm-hmm. Under anesthesia. 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 I hate big words. Anyway. So my husband's a deacon, and he said, there's got to be a saint we can pray to for this situation. So he starts to Google, and he finds Saint Gemma Galgani, who is an orphan like my daughter, who meningitis made her lose her hearing at times. It would come and go, as you know. So, but she was, you know, hard of hearing or deaf at times. My daughter is deaf. And she had the meningitis that caused her spine to have issues, and she had to wear this device that you just explained, my daughter, the scoliosis. She was put in a back brace that was torturous when mm-hmm. she first got it. It seemed like the perfect match. Yeah. So we started our novena to her, and we went back to the doctor. So my daughter was in the brace, and we were told the brace would hold the curve. It wouldn't fix it in any way, shape, or form, but it would hopefully keep it from getting worse. But she would definitely need surgery. So our prayer was to St. Gemma to just ask the Lord to avoid surgery for our daughter. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, we should have been more bold and asked for complete healing, but here's how the rest of the story goes. We went to the doctor, they did an x-ray, the doctor came in smiling, and he said, I don't know how to explain this, but her curve has straightened enough from 50% to 23% that she no longer needs surgery, that she'll never need surgery unless she wants it for cosmetic. And I started to cry, and I'm like, I can explain it. It's a saint. It was a miracle. In fact, we were so overwhelmed by this miracle that mm-hmm. I bought from P.O. Prince. I bought her and I matching shirts that says miracles happen, and which is something that Pope Francis said. And we put these pictures out, but the story doesn't end there. Because as I learned about St. Gemma and read about her more, I realized she had a very close relationship with her guardian angel. So I want you to share about Gemma's relationship with her guardian angel, and then I want to share about our faithies relationship.
Sure. That's amazing. And it's really incredible how these saints just adopt us out of nowhere, where, you know, I hadn't really heard of St. Gemma before I read her diary, and now she's one of my favorite saints, and I'm asking for her intercession all the time. So truly, they are looking out for us, and they know what we need. As for St. Gemma's relationship with her guardian angel, he appeared to her almost every day, and it was a combination of a relationship of consolation. He would spend hours talking to her about what heaven looked like, for example, which was something that was just impossible to reproduce on the page. So we don't have those descriptions, but he taught her about what God was like and what heaven was like, and was this just close friend to her. But on the other side, he also provided a lot of tough love. So she uses the words often that her guardian angel yelled at her, very strict. He would admonish her often. If she had made a bad confession, he would yell at her. If she was being tempted to vanity, he would yell at her. And actually, the first time he ever appeared to her was when she had just received a new gold watch with the chain as a present. And she was walking around town, kind of showing it off to people, just talking about it, and not necessarily a sin, you know, in and of itself. This is just something that she wanted to share. But her guardian angel reminded her that because of the level of sanctity she was called to, he said, quote, remember that the precious jewelry that adorns a spouse of the crucified king can only be thorns and the cross. So from that moment on, she got rid of this chain. She probably gave it away. She also took off a small ring that she was wearing, and she vowed to not be tempted by vanity and worldliness again. So
wow.
You can see just this incredible, this purification that she was called to go through, even from the smallest vanities, even from things that would distract from her prayer life or would distract from God, even when they weren't sinful in and of themselves. Her guardian angel would also help her with temptations. So sometimes he would leave her to fight them on her own. So she would be forced to call upon Jesus and to use her own will against mm-hmm. the temptations or against the demons. But other times he would come in and fight for her. And that probably the most well-known account of her guardian angel is after a particularly bad bout of suffering, he brought her a cup of coffee in bed. And so
I love him.
So we should all, you know, strive for this type of relationship with our guardian angel.
Yes.
It's very sweet to hear her read about him and also to hear her follow his spiritual direction, because that is the truest charity. And that's really the purpose of our guardian angels. It's not only to provide for our temporal safety, but for our spiritual safety, our spiritual growth, our avoidance of sin, and ultimately our salvation. So that's why anything that he did to her, even when he seems severe in his reproaches, was for her greater good. It was for this true charity of helping her get to heaven, which obviously he succeeded in because she is now a saint.
We're talking today with Kristen Van Uden. She is the spokesperson for Sophia Institute Press. The Diary of St. Gemma is our topic today, and we know how much I love St. Gemma. And as you're speaking, there's just so much. I'm so excited to dive deeper into this diary, spend more time in prayer with her, because one of the things that the Lord in my own life has called me to do was to start eradicating these little things that sometimes we can just say it's just part of my personality. Like, I don't like to hurt people's feelings, so I may use a little white lie or I don't like to get in trouble, so perhaps I just will, you know, just say part of the truth. And the Lord said to my heart, like, a lie is a lie. There's no such thing as a little mistruth. Like, you have to be truthful in all things. And so I have been learning to be very honest. So I tell my friends, please don't ask me how those jeans look on you. Please don't ask me. Like, I will tell you the truth. And even something as silly as swearing. Like, I never use the Lord's name in vain. I just don't. But I would occasionally use an A or an S or an F word. And the Lord's like, but that's beneath who you are as my daughter. And so these little tiny things that he didn't ask for those right away. We spent some, 15 years together before the first thing he asked me to get rid of was gossip, but that was a big one. And that one was big. And then, lately it's been these little things. But I really want to share the sweet story of our guardian angels. When we were kids, most of us prayed that prayer to light and guide, rule and guard. And what you just said kind of wraps that up, right? Like, they're not just there to make sure we don't stub our toe, but they're there to guide us, to enlighten us, to lead us in our holiness. And they're someone we should lean on and make a part of our daily prayer part of our life, like a real part of our lives. So a few years ago, my daughter is deaf and she uses American Sign Language to communicate. I was watching her sign to the air and assuming it was like some imaginary friend, because we hadn't really talked yet at that point about guardian angels. I hadn't really given her much instruction because she also has a developmental delay. So there's just little by little I can give her information. So I'm watching her sign and she was just very intent in this conversation. Some I could understand and some I can't, because she was kind of doing kind of a shorthanded sign. Right. So she finished talking and I said, excuse me, who are you talking to? And she looked at me like I was crazy and she signed, my guardian angel, who do you think? I was like, okay, who did I think?
Obviously.
I thought, she's like, yeah, my guardian angel. And I was like, okay. And I kept, it's just incredible. And then it was in preparing for my book, Encountering Signs of Faith, which I share Faith's adoption story and teaching her about the Catholic faith, that when researching St. Gemma, who I put in the book, researching her, that's when I discovered she had this relationship with her guardian angel. And it just floored me.
Yeah.
And so I may have not completely believed my daughter was speaking to her guardian angel, until I realized, oh yeah, she totally is. Mm-hmm. She totally has this special relationship because there's so much about the faith I can't teach her. And my prayer has been, Lord, just help her understand. Like, I know you can speak to her in ways that I cannot. And apparently he uses her guardian angel to do that.
That's amazing. I hope she chooses Gemma as a confirmation saint. Or
she did.
Okay.
She did. Yeah, it's like, yeah, she was confirmed last year. Yeah, it was a no-brainer.
10 out of 10. Like, that's amazing.
It totally had to be Saint Gemma. And also her confirmation sponsor is this young girl named Bridget that goes to our church, who, just is another just quick aside, I interpret the mass for her, and I missed sitting through the homilies. I usually bring a notebook, I take notes, and I missed it. So my prayer was, Lord, please just send somebody to interpret the homilies. It was a pretty far reach, really, to ask for such a thing, because at that time nobody was signing at our church. And this young girl, Bridget, who I know her family, came up at one point. She said, I'm studying to be a sign language interpreter, and I'd really love to sit with you and watch how you interpret the mass. And they said, of course, we'd love to have you. And I didn't tell her I had prayed for somebody to sign the homily. Mm-hmm. About a month or 2 months into watching us, she noticed that I sit down for the homily and I give faith, you know, some spiritual reading to some kids, appropriate stuff to do. And one day she said, do you mind if I interpret the mass? Wow. Which, of course, I burst into tears. I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. That was an answer to a prayer. And I think, if anything, that's one of the lessons that Saint Gemma really gives to me, to my family, to my daughter, is that the boldness of prayer, that the closeness of heaven, and that prayers are answered and God is not distant.
Absolutely. So, I can't wait to read your book then, if all of these all of these stories are included.
And more. It was it's a crazy God world if you open your heart to it. And I'm not quite as brave as Gemma to open it to all the suffering. I try to open it just to the good stuff, and God's like, that's not gonna work, but we'll get to that all eventually. Exactly.
Yeah,
it's not like we didn't have any suffering, but I really like the good answers to my prayers.
Yes. That's true. And I mean, Gemma got to the point where she has a chapter entitled Thirst for Suffering. So she really, it's just incredible to see that she truly understood that this life is only preparation for the next. And she was at the point where she was taking on additional kind of self-imposed penances, so that she had to come to some sort of agreement with her spiritual director about, no, on the days when you don't have the stigmata, you need to rest in bed and prepare yourself for this. But her just complete desire to imitate Jesus in all things, especially in pouring out literally everything she had for him, is really inspiring. And I like the point you brought up before of rooting out these little imperfections, because St. Gemma is such an example of that. And she self-diagnosed herself, her predominant fault, as vanity, as we've kind of touched on before, which seems surprising for someone of such great sanctity to have, you know, any faults. But it's because she recognized that she had this fault that she was able to overcome it. So the person who says, I am not a sinner, or I don't have any faults, is probably one of the greatest sinners. And the person who is very aware of all their sins is probably holier. So it's that humility that is really the key. And she had a lot of kind of nuanced roundabout answers to prayer in her life that helped her to overcome these faults. So one example that comes to mind is when God asked her to give up something that was good to bring about a greater good. And this was when she would go out on almsgiving walks. She would take whatever food was left over from her family's table, a couple, you know, things of pocket change, and go out and give to the poor. This is objectively a very good thing, right? She was performing a corporal work of mercy. She was spreading love. It was just very obviously good. But her confessor ordered her to stop doing this. And through obedience, which Jesus is very pleased with, her obedience to her confessor, she did stop. And the reason for this, which she came to understand later, was that these walks were providing an opportunity for worldliness, for distractions, for gossip, for just kind of not thinking of spiritual things. And the example of showing off the watch, for example, that's something that would have occurred out and about rather than where she was called to be, which for her was in this great state of prayer at home. And so she said, in her own words, something like, through this, Jesus worked in me a new conversion. The result was that I no longer cared about clothes and all those other things. And so this was an ongoing battle in her life. Another example of her guardian angel admonishing her was that during Mass once, she looked up to admire the outfit of somebody next to her. So not a sin. She wasn't looking up to judge anyone. You know, it was a positive thought. But still, he said, this is not a thought that is appropriate for where you are, which is the foot of the cross. So these things that aren't sins in and of themselves, but that point to sort of a defect in the soul, is something she worked on. And it really reminds me of another Sophia book we published this year called Rooting Out Hidden Faults. And that is about the particular examine. So I had not heard of this before, but it's an examination of conscience that's based not on the Ten Commandments, but on the seven deadly sins. And so, like you just said, sometimes these seven deadly sins won't manifest necessarily as mortal sins, but sometimes as personality traits. So somebody will just say, oh, he has a temper, or he's irritable, they have anger issues, he's just like, I don't know, you could say he's a cheapskate when it's really avarice. And that's kind of obfuscating and removing the root, which is that this could be a sin. This isn't just a natural occurrence that you can't overcome. This could have a root in sin, in our fallen condition. And that's actually pretty empowering to understand, because that means you can get rid of it and you can grow beyond that. If it's a sin, you can use, obviously, the graces available to overcome it. And Gemma provides really an interesting case study in examining herself in humility, because humility is really just the truth. It's not an overestimation of ourselves, nor an underestimation. And then giving that entirely to Jesus, even if it meant that some of these things that she enjoyed that were not sinful in and of themselves, but that came from this root of a sin, would have to go.
Wow. Well, you've not only given me lots of fruit for thought to dive back into the diary, pen in hand, and go deeper in my own spiritual life, but apparently I'll be sending an email over to Sophia Institute Press after we get offline and ask for a couple more books to get some more interviews, because you mentioned some really amazing resources. That last one in particular really got my interest, because I say that all the time, like even though you recognize something in yourself as maybe a part of who you are, is not meant to stay there if it separates you from God.
Exactly.
You know, like it doesn't, maybe you are somebody who gets angry or easily, but you're definitely not meant to stay that way, and that God always gives us the graces to grow in holiness and to make these changes. So yeah, we'll be grabbing that one too, listeners. Be ready for that one. So we've been talking today with Kristen Van Uden, and I'm so sad that our time is over, because I've really enjoyed speaking with you, especially about this amazing topic. Tell us how we can get our own copy, because everyone's going to want one, of the diary. Why do I keep, I'm clearly hungry, the Diary of St. Gemma.
So it's available at sophiainstitute.com. And just remember that this diary went through a lot to make it to your hands. You probably are familiar with the story, Allison, of the manuscript being stolen by a demon from Gemma's room. And then it was burnt all the way through, eventually returned after her confessor performed an exorcism over it, but still legible. So clearly the devil was invested in you not reading this book, and God is very invested in bringing this to print. So we're very grateful that we've re-released it in this very readable format. It's very short and readable. So best place is directly at our website, which is sophiainstitute.com.
And I liked that, like, each page, each chapter is small, so you could use it as a daily devotional.
Oh, definitely.
Like Advent, sometimes in Advent, we don't think about the spiritual aspect of that season. So if you're looking for something to do in Advent, especially that it's such a time of opulence and greed and avarice, and we can get very wrapped up in the tidings of the material of the season, I highly recommend grabbing the Diary of St. Gemma for your Advent daily reflections. I think you'll find that very advantageous to your Advent, but an advantageous Advent. There we go. But also anytime reading, it's beautiful. Thank you, Kristen, so much for making the time to talk with us today.
Thanks again. God bless.
You have been listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras. God bless.
Thank you for listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras. Your reviews at your favorite podcast service help this podcast reach others who may be blessed by the content. please subscribe and share with others. Come back soon for an all-new episode.